Hey there. Welcome to Crosshairs Radio. This is episode 36, and on today's show, we have Cole Oberman. Who's Cole Oberman? He is a professional mountain bike racer for Ride Biker Alliance. Also pretty darn good on the cyclocross bike. Goes out and wins himself some gravel races when he's got a free weekend, which doesn't seem like he has many. And also pretty much a badass when it comes to short track mountain bike racing. We caught up with Cole after he drove down to DC from Delaware, where yesterday on Sunday he won another round of the Mid-Atlantic Super Series, cyclocross, it's a mountain bike series around Philadelphia, up in Iron Hill, I believe was the race that he won. Came down, we had some food, he drank some coffee because he'd been up like all day, and we chatted. It was a good conversation. Cole's definitely a guy you all should get to know and also follow. He's going to be racing cyclocross coming up here in the Mid-Atlantic, hitting all the UCI races. We'll be heading up to the Northeast as well. You can also, for the next week, follow him down in Bogota, in Colombia, where he'll be doing a week-long mountain bike race, stage race, which is pretty freaking awesome. So we have that to look forward to. Good conversation with Cole. It's also is always awesome when somebody shows up in the basement and I get to talk to them face to face. So that was a fun time. This podcast episode is brought to you by Michelin. Michelin Bicycle USA and their new line of power tires. They have four models. Cover the spectrum of road riding from high mileage training to maximum output racing. They're Power Protection Plus. This is the thing that interests me because I am not only large but also not friendly to bikes in the way that I ride them or wheels or tires. But Power Protection Plus is the latest tire in the power line. It offers excellent rolling resistance, better sidewall protection, and less wear. So it's definitely one that you want to get on there for your training rides out there on the gravel. It's something that can withstand the elements. Power Protection Plus, ideal for riding on any road surface and is only available in the United States. So sorry if you're outside of the United States. Maybe if you have a friend in the U.S., get them to send you some of these Michelin tires. You can also follow Michelin on social media, Facebook, just search for Michelin, Twitter at Michelin Bike USA, Instagram at Michelin USA, and YouTube, Michelin Bike. Do me a favor. Let Michelin know that you heard about them on Crosshairs Radio and also on the Wide Angle Podium. That helps us to, one, get their name out there, but two, let them know that them supporting the Wide Angle Podium Network and also Crosshairs Radio is a worthwhile investment. And it's something that we hope other sponsors will follow up on. So yeah, Twitter at Michelin Bike USA, give them a shout out. Let them know where you heard about them. We also always brought to you by the Wide Angle Podium, which Crosshairs Radio is a part of. There's bonus episode up there with me, talking about me with Scott Herman. And you get to listen to that if you become a member, become a donor, sponsor some shows. You can pick the shows that you want to support. It'd be great to support all of them. That's what I do. Here's a little glimpse into my own soul. The one show I don't support is Crosshairs Radio. I figure I give it enough support by just talking to you all. But all of the other shows I put my money into. But if you go to wideanglepodium.com, you can sign up. Give a couple bucks. It really doesn't cost that much. If not, you know, go out on social media. Let them know you listen. And we'll keep on growing that network, which will be pretty darn cool. I'm going to give you one more plea as far as social media goes and that kind of stuff. If you listen on iTunes, Crosshairs Radio, go in there, give us a review. 5 stars would be awesome. Positive review would be amazing. If it's a negative review, you know, you can just shoot me an email at feedback at cxairs.com and let me know what I'm doing wrong there. That's probably be the best way to go about that. Yeah. All right, I think that's about it. Got a couple podcast episodes that I am piling up here. About to go on vacation to upstate Minnesota, which I'm really looking forward to. So be out of the loop for about 10 days or so, but we will still have episodes going up. That's the programming note. That's all the pleas. That's the sponsors. Now let's listen to the show. Here's Cole. Cole, how's it going?
It's going good, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. You need to get up there a little closer on it.
Yeah.
You can bring it towards you.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going good.
Yeah, there we go.
You know, living thanks my dream. Yeah.
Thanks for coming and hanging out in the basement.
Yeah, no problem. Just kind of worked out. I was driving a big loop, so.
Yeah, so what happened? It is Sunday, and so I guess, yeah, you started your day in Harrisonburg.
No, I started my day in Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, ooh, okay.
Yeah, so I drove up to my parents' place there. That's where I grew up last night. And then drove, to Newark, Delaware this morning. Raced a Mid-Atlantic Super Series cross-country race. And then now I'm in D.C.
Nice. So and that went pretty well. Another top step for you.
Yeah, it was sweet. It's always fun to get out and do some of the local cross-country races. And, man, we got so many hitters around here. It's always competitive and a nice hard race. So it's cool.
Right. So Mid-Atlantic Super Series, that's mainly, you got no more Maryland races, are there?
Just Fairhill.
Okay, Fairhill.
Yeah, we got two Fairhill races.
Yeah, and then sort of north from there.
Yeah, centered around Philly, though, generally. Right. So they're all mostly within an hour.
Right. And it was this the last one, or are there more? Oh, no, I'm actually announcing the last one. I should know that.
I think there's a few more, actually. Yeah. It's a huge series. Some years there's been upwards of 15 events, so it's cool.
Great, very cool. And we're having, this insane heat wave. How do you prepare for that when you're racing?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, part of it's mental, just, knowing it's going to feel miserable. And the other part is obviously pre-hydrating and hydrating well during the race. And just you adapt to the heat. So if you just, I ride purposely in the heat a lot, 'cause we do a lot of the cross country races start at 2 PM. It's, high heat for the day. So I just, specifically try to get ready, but mostly it just sucks.
So how many, especially a race here where you're sort of self-supported. So how many bottles do you have in the tech zone?
Yeah, so the course today, it was just three, 8-mile laps. So I had three bottles.
Okay.
Drank them all, and then about a gallon after the race.
Right.
But, yeah.
From there, you sort of got an exciting trip planned coming up.
Yeah, so I'm heading to Bogota, Colombia on Wednesday for the Legends of El Dorado stage race. So it's a 7-day mountain bike stage race that goes from Bogota to Medellin.
So how does that happen? How do you get invited, or what's the process for getting involved in that?
Yeah, so the real short story is my eyewear sponsor Jewelbo contacted me. They have a South American distributor that's a partner with the race, and they wanted to bring down a North American rider to get some more North American exposure for the race, and that happened to be me. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's sweet.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
very cool. So people out there, anything in the Mid-Atlantic, obviously know who you are. You're always out there mountain biking, cyclocross. Do you ever do any road?
Just sparingly.
Yeah.
I crit every once in a while. I like it. It's just hard to fit it into the schedule. Mostly. Yeah.
But other parts of the country or listeners out there may not be familiar with Cole Oberman. So where did you come from? How did I it's funny because I what I'm going to do right now is what I do a lot in these interviews, and then I didn't do it in the last one, and everybody was like, oh, that was a nice little change that you didn't have to go through somebody's whole background, but I don't care. We're doing it with you. So
sweet. I can work with that.
So where did you come from? And from what I know you, it's sort of like you came on the scene a little later, it seems like.
Yeah. So, the short answer is, I grew up in central Pennsylvania in Harrisburg, born and raised, lived there, through high school. But I've always ridden bikes. My dad was a cyclist, so I got into it young. I started racing BMX when I was 9.
Okay.
And then jumping and stuff. And then I think I was 12 and my dad surprised me with a mountain bike. It was a sweet Trek 820 aluminum rigid bike. And we started riding Michaud, which is the rockiest place
on
earth.
Yeah.
And so I kind of cut my teeth doing that as a kid and, raced casually, but not seriously. I was a freaking single speeder, up until I was 20, I did that for a while. and just had fun with it. And yeah, I never went through like a junior development pathway or, you know, really took it seriously until I think I was 19. I moved to New Mexico with a girl I was dating at the time, like, because that's a great move. 19 and don't know anyone in the city. But, you know, I moved there and I, you know, just kind of lucked into this great cycling club called Mountaintop Cycling there. And, you know, some of the like regional mountain bike pros rode for that. And like, I don't know, they just showed me a little bit how to train and like kind of hooked me into that community. And I just like, I don't know, kind of decided at 19 that I was like, I think I'm gonna be a pro bike racer now. That seems like a cool thing to do.
That's interesting. How long were you in New Mexico?
Just a year, you know, because inevitably me and that girl broke up and I was lonely. So I moved back in with my parents for the first time, you know, but, you know, stuck with the bike racing thing. And yeah, got, you know, eventually moved down to Philly, which is, if you grew up in central Pennsylvania, one of the two places you end up, Pittsburgh or Philly, generally.
Right.
Maybe Baltimore. But yeah, a lot of my friends had moved there. I was going to Temple University by that point, and, you know, riding for a local club team there. And just, yeah, so kind of this Mid-Atlantic Super Series thing was what kept me going.
So how do you go from, I think I'm going to, you know, I want to be a pro. I mean, what puts you there? What results are you getting? What kind of races? What's your experience that says, hey, this is something that I think I can do?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I mean, I won the genetic lottery. So thanks, mom and dad. Like, cause so success came to me pretty quick with mountain bike racing. Like, a pretty minimal amount of training, you know, got me to like winning Cat 1 races. So, yeah, I raced 1 year in New Mexico and I think 1 year once I moved back of, you know, like Cat 1. And yeah, won a bunch of races in the Mid-Atlantic Super Series and then moved up. I guess I was 20 when I got my pro license. And then, yeah.
So how old are you now?
So I'm 25 now. I turn 26 next week in Columbia, which will be interesting.
That'll be a good birthday.
Yeah, I think so.
So 20, you start to get serious about it. Then, you know, what's the journey from there? I mean, I know that moving forward, you're on a different team now, but you spent some time with a rare disease cycling. That seemed like a good place to be, at least for that time, and got to spend some time in Europe. I mean, how does that progression happen?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I just, you know, like all things I do in life, I just did it the hard way. And like, I literally, when I was 20 or 21, like, hey, I'm gonna race the Pro XCT cross country series now. And so I bought myself a ticket down to Austin, Texas for the Mellow Johnny's Classic, which was, you know, the season opener for a long time, and just showed up and got my head kicked in and did that for, you know, the whole season. Did, you know, Benelli and Fontana, the California races. And I think that first year I'd had good enough results. I was U23 obviously at the time, that I was able to do Mount St. Anne and Wyndham World Cups with the national team. And yeah, just got some cool experience right off the bat. But yeah, I don't know, I just kind of put my head down, and you know, every time I would get my ass kicked, it for whatever reason made me want to train harder. So
yeah, I mean, I that's obviously probably one of the keys to your success. Well, so just basically self-supported from that time, just,
yeah, I mean, I, you know, I rode for, you know, a bike shop that like gave me good support for being a bike shop team. And you know, so I was like loaned a bike for the year and, you know, had some like minor equipment sponsors and stuff. But yeah, I was, yeah, working at the bike shop, going to school, you know, my parents would help me when they could, but it was pretty self-supported. It's definitely shoestring, still is. But
so when you were doing when you were doing the single speed, was that mountain bikes, single speed mountain bikes, or just?
Yeah. So that was, I mean, yeah, I definitely like did the fixed gear thing. Like, yeah, that was like, you know, when I was getting out of high school, that was getting popular. And so that was what I think really got me back into riding a lot, was just like riding my fixed gear around town. And, you know, that was like,
doing any alley cats?
Not really, because, you know, Harrisburg doesn't really have, like, a messenger right. scene. But, you know, we definitely had our crew, you know, of just, like, bike punks, basically. And, right. you know, we'd just, like, ride around the shows or just to go hang out. And, you know, yeah, that got me back into it. And so I raced some single-speed mountain bike. You know, I had a sweet 26 rim brake.
Yeah, but see, now you got yourself involved where you all actually started the messenger culture in Harrisonburg.
Yeah, so, yeah, our savior, Nick Waite, owner of Protested Gear, yeah, we, you know, helped us start Giddy Up Courier, and so now we're running some food delivery, and it's been really great. Cool. We've had some good success already, and it's, you know, an interesting job, and it's
kind of neat. It's neat that, you know, you look at, you know, I have a lot of friends, especially in DC, bike messengers, and it's almost a dying breed. And it, as far as what traditionally was known as, you know, documents and all that kind of stuff just don't exist anymore. And they,
right.
you know, some of them make their living standing in lines and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I guess the whole food delivery and everything else that can be delivered is sort of giving it new life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, you know, and I mean, I've always had a lot of friends that did messenger work, but, you know, I never did it when I was in Philly myself. And it does seem like it's shifting a lot more to food and like package delivery and like, you know, super quick, like Amazon style delivery. Right. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's kind of fun seeing how much crap you can cram into a backpack and carry around on a bicycle. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And it keeps you pedaling, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little challenging. I mean, just last week I did like a 5-hour road ride, a bunch of like mountain passes and got done. I was like, oh, I got 15 minutes till my shift starts. Damn.
Yeah, that's definitely gotta be tough. But back to the racing, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I wanted to get back to your mountain bike career. But in that timeline, where did you find cyclocross?
So once I moved back to Pennsylvania from New Mexico, which was 2010 or 11, you know, it was right when cyclocross was really blowing up. And yeah, I just like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'd bought a cyclocross bike and, you know, showed up and did, I think, some of the PACX races. And
sure.
You know, just really liked it immediately, and I'm a super anaerobic rider, so it was something that I really enjoyed because I can just kind of like snap again and again. So cross, yeah, it just was exciting from the beginning.
You know, that's interesting that sort of, you know, looking at your race results and what you excel in, it seems like it really is those short, hard efforts, and you've done exceptionally well in short track.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel like that's something that you train for specifically now? Because, I mean, what did you win this year? You won a...
Yeah, so the Fontana Pro XCT short
track. Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great result.
Thank you. Yeah, that was an interesting one. And that was a cool day because I like woke up and I just knew I had the legs. And
yeah.
I had like run through that race, you know, 1,000 times in my head and like had this plan and like, you know, told our team manager in the van before the race, was like, I'm going to win today. And like, I'm going to do this. And like just executed this textbook plan where I would Todd Wells attacked and with like 4 laps to go to get a preem, like $50 preem. I was like, okay, Todd. And then like just jumped off the back of that. And yeah, I was able to get a good gap and stayed clear for the rest.
That's great. So, but this is, I mean, that wasn't a fluke. Was it that race? You had like 2 podiums a year before, right? In short track or more than that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had like kind of an amazing streak. I think for the last 2 years, I've only had 2 outside of the top 10 finishes in pro short tracks. So yeah, I had a second place at Benelli. I actually went away with Sergio Manticon from Trek
Factory.
Oh,
really?
Nice. Yeah.
Awesome.
And we held off the field at Benelli the year before. And then I had a second place to Timmerman in Boston.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Huh. So we need to have a short track as an Olympic sport.
Yes, I highly agree. Or even just a World Cup sport.
Yeah.
Would be safe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So is short track more of an American discipline?
So I think, yeah, you know, like criterium racing, I think it is primarily an American discipline. It was in the past a World Cup discipline,
mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of like four cross just went the way of the dodo and was,
yeah,
was axed over. Because if you watch the Off-Road to Athens documentary, you know, part of the whole Sue Haywood, Mary McConnellog debacle was over UCI short track points for Olympic selection.
Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it was at one point, you know, raced more globally, and then Eliminator replaced it, and now Eliminator's gone away. But yeah, so anyway, it is an American thing.
Yeah. I had when I was working these past World Cups, I had an interesting discussion about Eliminator because I know me and my friends, we loved watching it. Like, especially like the Red Bull coverage. Eliminator,
yeah.
It was awesome. It was so much fun. The actual teams, especially the mechanics and then the riders as well, hated it. It was like the worst idea ever. They just, the day they stopped doing Eliminator was like the best day of their lives.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's almost like doing gold sprints at the bar. You like go super hard for a minute. And then you stand around for an hour and a half. And so, yeah, it takes up the whole day.
That was the part that they just
yeah.
could not get their heads around, that it was one whole day from morning to pretty much evening that was wasted for that competition. But made for good TV.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think they should just do short tracks. I mean, it's
that's even more exciting.
There's like group carnage, you know, and like it only takes 30 minutes.
Right, and it's done.
Right.
And you can do it. You can even do it on one of those practice days, you know, and have the short track.
Totally.
I mean, they're able to do cross country and downhill in the same location, so.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll fix that after we're done here.
Yeah, we'll just get Simon Burney on the phone.
There you go.
And
perfect.
Make that happen. Yeah.
Perfect. We can do that. But yeah, so I think we were talking mainly just getting into cyclocross and doing some of those PACX and probably. Huh, was JR doing like cyclocross races at that point? Abra, was that even?
So that's like, you know, even Harrisburg's not quite close enough to that. Okay. So I still haven't really done any Pittsburgh races. You know, I do obviously some of his summer events, but
yeah.
So no, it was more like PACX and then, you know,
okay.
Mac,
so you're closer
Mac.
To Philadelphia type stuff. Yeah. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Right. And you seem like, it definitely mountain biking is your main pursuit, but you seem to take the cyclocross serious as well. I mean, you don't really just dabble in it and then stop. You seem to enjoy getting in there and getting dirty during the cyclocross season.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I really like cyclocross. I sometimes question why I don't focus on that as more of my primary pursuit, you know, and it's always been for me, it's like I've just been doing mountain biking longer. So my level of support I get as a mountain bike racer just always exceeds what I can get for cross. And, you know, up until this point, it's just made more sense for me to keep mountain biking as my main focus. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I definitely intend to race a full cyclocross calendar this year. And yeah.
Does part of that have to do with support? I mean, you changed teams last year to this year. Explain exactly. I'm still, you know, I know, and I've talked to Colt, and I understand sort of the Ride Bike Alliance, but how exactly does this work, and what is it doing for you as far as this season is concerned?
Yeah, so the Ride Biker Alliance organization itself is fairly multifaceted. Obviously, you know, we have this professional team, but we also have, you know, what is basically like a buyer's club for club teams. We basically leverage our membership to get really good deals on like custom clothing. But you know, as far as the pro team, yeah, it's a different model than anything we've seen in cycling really. So it takes certain aspects of like a factory team, you know, like we have like a team RV and team staff, and we have central title sponsors. So like obviously Ride Biker and then Kenda is another big supporter of the team that all the team members are, you know, required to represent. But you know, below that, like at the race kind of factory team support, it's a semi-privateer program. So each rider on the team is also able to have their own bike sponsor and wheel sponsor, you know. So for me it's Felt and Stan Snow tubes and protested gear, and so it's really cool, you know, so you get this great support at the race and the stability of a factory team, but you know, you can also use your personal connections a lot better. And so, you know, our hope is that it creates a more sustainable, you know, longer lasting and, you know, hopefully more lucrative career path for off-road cyclists in the US, but specifically mountain bikers right now.
So when you're at a race and there are multiple people on Ride Biker Alliance on the sort of the pro level team, do you feel like those are your teammates, or that's the part that I've always like had a hard time just grasping.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it totally feels like a team. And for me, it's really exciting because this is the first year I've actually had a team to travel with. So yeah, we, you know, travel together. Excuse me. you know, we travel together. We are housed together. You know, we share team resources. It's just that we each have different supporting sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like when we're at a race, we are there as Team Ride Biker.
And
it definitely feels like a team. Like I said, it's super exciting for me because I've basically traveled alone for 4 or 5 years to all these races. And so, yeah, like having a team mechanic and a team manager to look after us is amazing.
Yeah, that's nice. And that's something that is, you know, coming from cyclocross where there are a couple larger teams, but not really any with big rosters other than, I don't think anybody has more than like three or four or five riders. So having that experience, I guess that's probably more prevalent on the mountain bike side, but it's got to be cool to just sort of have that support and have that sort of encampment to go to and have not have as many worries on a race day.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. A funny story about that. Like I've never even had a mechanic at a race before. So early this spring at the first Benelli race, I like got done racing, parked my bike, walked into the sweet RV, because that's the thing I can do now. But like, walked back out, my bike was gone, and I had like a 5-minute freak out. I thought somebody had stolen my bike, and then the mechanic like walks back up whistling with my like super shiny bike, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's how that works?
Yeah, he was just washing my bike. It's not gone.
Right. So even when you were doing the World Cups, was that with USA Cycling? Or was that on your own?
So that was on my own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was an interesting experience for sure. So I was riding for Rare Disease Cycling, which is a, you know, Mid-Atlantic-based elite team at that point. And me and my buddy Dave Flatten, yeah, we just, you know, had the opportunity. We both had, you know, had gotten accepted to do the World Cups as, you know, a national team start. So we get the uniform and got like in race support from USA Cycling, but the actual like going to Europe and finding the races was, you know, kind of on us.
Did they support anybody, or was just everybody on their own?
So there are a select few athletes, basically our top point earners.
That's sort of how it is in cyclocross too.
Yeah, that get, you know, more of a full like housing support, you know, like travel support in Europe. But yeah, I mean, for most riders that go, that are at least elite, you know, I think it's different for U23 and junior. Yeah, it's more of an on-your-own pursuit.
But you still were wearing the kit.
Yeah, so...
Because that's the difference between cyclocross also. It's like the ones, sort of the ordained ones who are there, wear the kit and everything, and then there are also other Americans who can come over, do the World Cup, so they qualify, and they're just sort of completely on their own from, you know, wearing their own kits to everything, supporting themselves to everything.
Yeah, so the way that mountain bike World Cup races are protected is a little different than the way cyclocross ones are. So there's a threshold of points for mountain bike that if you have X amount of points, you're eligible to race the World Cup in your trade team kit. If you have less than that number of points, you can only start through your national federation.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. And you did, so I know you did Alpstadt.
Yeah.
And then?
I did Nova Mesa.
Nova Mesa, so like where Worlds were.
Yeah.
Those are two different courses.
Yeah. And yeah, I had two very different experiences at those two races. You know, I mean, the trip was amazing. And we were actually traveling with Spencer Paxson, who's a Kona rider, and one of the Canadian Norco riders, so we had somebody to show us around. But yeah, I mean, racing to Nova Mesto is maybe the most incredible experience I've ever had racing on a bike. There was, you know, 25,000 or 30,000 fans there, you know, screaming for you by name because they all read the rider guide.
Awesome.
And they're like
that's
cranking
great.
These old Soviet air raid sirens and like just like, I mean, they're totally rowdy, like completely drunk, like just, you know, screaming the whole time, which just makes you feel totally chainless. I mean, you can just smash the whole race.
Right.
And that course is like rooty and punchy and like kind of a lot like our riding in the Mid-Atlantic here. So I was,
yeah, and lots of rock gardens, like those downhill rock gardens too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then conversely at Alpstadt, I just totally crapped the bed.
That seems like that's just a race of attrition. It seems like just so many long, boring climbs and then
so steep, and it's the greasiest, slipperiest track when it's wet. It's
like
limestone embedded in the ground with like mud that's like polylube grease.
Right.
It's just like I just crashed on top of myself like 4, 5, 6 times, broke my brake lever off. It's not my best day.
Yeah. Mm. So what's the goal now? I mean, is it to get back there? Is it to continue to do that? I mean, what are you?
Yeah, so, you know, mountain biking being an Olympic sport hits this interesting reset every 4 years where, you know, for the 2 years before the Olympics, everybody's focused on that. But yeah, for me, like, I think the next 2 years I'm going to, you know, do a little bit less focus on UCI racing and do a little bit more of like the epic ride style or more stage racing and just like basically try to have some more adventures, you know, while maintaining some UCI points. And then I'd love to race at the World Cup level. I'd love to get there. You know, and I think it's something that I can do in the long term, but you know, for the next 2 years, it's not as important because it's not money wise. It's a little bit harder to do. There's not a whole lot of prize money doing UCI races. So, you know, yeah, I'll probably just, yeah, do some more fun, longer distance style races. And then maybe in, you know, 2018 with the Olympic cycle coming back around, make a run at that.
So you've paired up with Jeremiah Bishop in some of those sort of adventure time with the Big Bear and stuff like that. Has he sort of, that sort of seems like almost his way of thinking on some of this stuff. Has he influenced you at all in sort of how you should go forward? Or
yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Jeremiah has, you know, really been a mentor to me. You know, he was somebody that I looked up to a lot, obviously growing up in this region. And then, you know, he was formerly my coach for a while, but has, you know, been my training partner, you know, consistently. And yeah, just a great mentor to me. And so, yeah, he's definitely, he's a nut, but he's big on, big on doing crazy adventures on the bike and just getting into trouble. And so I think it's definitely rubbed off on me a little bit.
Yeah, that seems, so was him being in Harrisonburg, was that sort of your decision to move down there or just a...
Yeah, so between him and, you know, Nick Waite and some of the other crew that lives there, right. I just come down there to train a lot and just kind of fell in love with the town. You know, it's got this, like, great music and art scene and, like, good food and coffee. And, like, so it was, like, everything I love culturally plus, like, riding that is just beyond words incredible.
Yeah, and it just makes me so upset because, I mean, I think I told you this before, where I lived there for a year,
yeah.
Like, right, you know, out of law school and just didn't know anybody, wasn't riding a bike. It was like mid-90s, so I don't think that scene definitely wasn't there yet. And I was like, oh, and now I look back on it, and I was like, oh, man, it would have just been like, you know, 10 years later, it would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's that town's definitely changed a lot, and I think I moved there at the right time where they had this, like, downtown renaissance.
Right.
And, you know, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah. No, that's it is an amazing, and you're so close to all that stuff. And what I love is seeing, you know, just from social media, from posts from, like, Jeremiah, from you, from even like when Dombrowski's in town and that kind of stuff, just the, like, insane rides that y'all do. I mean, it must make racing almost easy compared to what you're doing just going out there and training.
Yeah.
Or if you even call it training, just out there riding your bike.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely training. I mean, it's real specific, real focused training.
Okay.
And we have this, like, solid group. But I mean, the terrain makes it a lot easier to be super fit. I mean, I don't know if people realize that there's hour-long road climbs on the East Coast, but you know, we have those. We have hour and a half long, like, dirt road climbs, like, just gnarly terrain. I mean, it's rocky where you want it, it's flowy where you want it. And, I mean, even the road riding, I think the road riding is almost better in Harrisonburg because it's just almost incomparable to anywhere in the country. There's no cars and there's thousands of miles of road and mountain passes. And I mean, I
just
could go
so
on.
Great. Yeah. No, plus you have, like, the national forest there and everything else. And just, it's a cool place. And then even not that far away, I know, you know, going up to, like, Davis and Raw Talent Ranch and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we shouldn't tell them about the riding.
Oh, no. I want as many people to move down there as possible. Like, pick up your lives and move to Harrisonburg.
There you go.
Now.
There you go.
It's everything you've been dreaming of.
That's amazing. My only fear is that if too many people do that, then you're going to start your own, like, local cyclocross scene, and then we won't see you guys anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. People aren't so big on cyclocross up in the mountains there. Like, everybody wants to ride their trail bike all fall. You know?
That's true.
Which I can't blame them. But.
No. Talking about that, what do you think about, you know, you sort of stuck your head into a lot of, UCI racing last season, racing for, were you racing for Protesta Gear? Were you racing with Nick and those guys or just sort
so
of?
I raced for Rare Disease through New Year's and then, you know, in the new season raced for Protesta because they're one of my sponsors for my program now.
Sure. All right. What are you thinking about as far as this season goes? What's your schedule going to look like cyclocross-wise?
So, you know, primarily focused on the New England and Mid-Atlantic UCI races. You know, might make a venture into the Midwest to do the Continental Championships, depending on how I'm racing. And I applied for the World Cups in Iowa and Vegas, you know, whether I get a start slot or not.
Where are you? Do you know where you are for Americans ranking-wise?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Inside the top 300, so that's good. Yeah, I mean, you know, I just started to stack some points up next year, so, you know,
it'll be interesting, you know, because it's 16, so.
Right. I mean, you know, I'm hoping that I can maybe leverage the fact that I'll be super fit coming out of mountain bike season, but, you know, I won't be heartbroken if I don't. There's a lot of deserving riders out there, and so I understand that it's a hard decision for them to make. And
What are the races? I know Nittany's before. And then Rochester,
So I think Rochester be the first, my first definite race of the year. Then Nittany. And then, where's it? I guess it goes up to New England from there, pretty much. I think we got Gloucester pretty early on this year.
Yeah.
And then, basically, DCCX, Highland Park, Charm City is definitely, that'd be a big target race for me this year, especially with it being a C1.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Got to make sure you don't get caught in no man's land this year.
Yeah. I've made some big changes to my training this year. And so I'm, you know, getting even more explosive than I have been in the past. So I'm hoping that that'll help bridge that gap. And also just trying to do a lot of cornering work. You know,
it's, yeah.
I always wish that my mountain bike handling skills would transfer more to cross, but it's just a totally different game. So.
Yeah, and it is. And even it, they're like different corners.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole different skill set, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just remember those races because I was saying your name a lot because it was, you were just stuck. It was like leaders and you'd move up a little bit and then just not get there and then over your shoulder, but you were like keeping them at bay. It was that other group and it was just Cole right in the middle.
Yeah, that was definitely the story of my cross season last year. I'd like make it into the front group and then somebody'd pop an attack off the front and I'd immediately back out because I didn't get to recover. It was, yeah, it was tough. But I think this year, you know, I definitely hope to be fighting for the podium and, you know, if this mountain bike season's any indication of the way it'll go, you know, I'm feeling pretty confident about it.
You know, and then a month ago we saw you up in West Virginia, Morgantown area for Hillbilly Roubaix, up there a second year defending your title. Where does that kind of, I mean, that doesn't, for most, I would say, mountain bikers who are, you know, maybe concentrating on a cross country season, doing a race like that in the middle, not always on their schedule. So where does that come into your thinking? And is it just wanting to do more of these adventure type races or just?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that, you know, it's just good to have some variety. I really enjoy gravel racing and, you know, like marathon style racing where it's a little more tactical. You get some of those road tactics in there and yeah, you just have to think more strategically. But, you know, also for me, like, I respond really well to doing big rides fitness wise. And, you know, it's actually a pretty big part of my training is doing some extended rides and extended events like that. So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's fun and it's also good for my cross country fitness.
So something like Hillbilly, which is 70 plus miles, you know, gravel, just regular tarmac, and then some sketchy, but not horrible, like, you know, sort of pothole type.
I mean, some of it's borderline horrible. I mean, it's awesome. It's definitely,
But that's, you know, what we were talking about earlier with being in Harrisonburg, that can't be that far off from some of those training rides that you've done.
No, it's pretty good. Yeah. You know, definitely used to that kind of just stretching it pretty thin.
Yeah. So other than out there riding bikes, what are you doing with your life?
I mean, yeah, you know, delivering food, working at Protested Gear, you know, go to some shows and, you know, do a little bit of that and always entertain the idea of playing in a band again. But
what's your history of playing in bands in the past?
So starting in high school up until I was like 21, I played in a series of awful bands, you know, a bunch of punk bands, a couple of screamo bands later on at the end. And then I was at Nationals in Idaho and like got kicked out of my last band via text message because I wasn't coming to practice enough and they could never play shows because I wasn't around. So
what instrument?
So I was playing, I think I was playing drums in that last band, but okay. I play guitar and bass too. So
nice. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have you, so the dream to start the, it's like it seems like everybody on Protested Gear plays something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of why I ended up in Harrisburg too. Cause I just like found my family. It was, you know, like all these like guys that are like pretty elite cyclists, but also, you know, just real into punk and indie and stuff. And so it just was a perfect outlet for me.
Yeah. And Nick sort of being the sort of ringleader of that. He's sort of a funny story too, you know, started as the roadie and then the mountain bike and cyclocross and just sort of carving his own path.
Yeah. I mean, he had a super interesting path. I mean, he was top junior national champion mountain biker. Yeah. Then, you know, switched to the road. He was like the original Kelly Benefits squad.
Right.
Like when that squad started, he was like the original rider, but then, you know, eventually I think, you know, decided to give it up and he became a bike messenger in New York and like just, you know, it took just like a pretty wild turn from it.
So. Yeah. It's sort of, you know, I look at you and it's sort of interesting with, you know, having him around and having Jeremiah, you're definitely getting these influences that aren't necessarily the traditional route maybe.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, nothing about my, you know, route to becoming, you know, a pro cyclist has been traditional. So I think it's all been good for me. Yeah, and it gives me a good perspective, too, because it's, you know, I spend a lot of time around really focused, really serious bike racers, and it's nice to get the different perspective that that different people have, you know?
And as far as, you know, we can sit there and talk about nachos or even, like, you know, out there having fun, but you're serious about the, I mean, you take being a pro seriously, I mean, pretty strict on the training and the diet. Like, are you training with power when you're on your road bike and all that kind of stuff? And is it, you know, what does your training look like? And then what do you look at that and say, okay, these are the things that I need to improve moving forward?
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, I mean, you know, my training is really focused and I am definitely serious about it. You know, I try to be a well-rounded person outside of cycling just because I think that's an important thing. But yeah, I take cycling super seriously and I, you know, work with a coach. I work with a CTS coach, Adam Pulford. You know, and so it's pretty dialed. I train with power and definitely, yeah, you know, try to train really specifically for the discipline I'm racing for. You know, so I do a lot of like simulated cross country races and then later in the fall, like simulated, you know, cyclocross races where I like break it down into 15 or 30 minute blocks and, you know, go out on like a fake course and just try to hit it at race pace.
Right. Nationals this year.
Yeah.
Came in there with some expectations and maybe didn't really turn out the way that you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, it was tough, you know, and it's tough racing both a mountain and a cross season. So I was pretty burnt by the time November rolled around and I had, you know, taken some time off the bike and was just kind of getting back to training in the middle of December and, you know, decided since.
All right. So we're talking about cross nationals.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. No, let's start there. But that was going to talk about just, going to elevation this year, just recently as well. And, cross country, but no, finish off of, with Asheville.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, Asheville being so close, you know, we decided to roll down and I took a shot at it, but that didn't, I didn't find my legs till halfway through the race. So it didn't really work out, but
it seems sort of unfortunate because it seems like if it had been an early season race, it probably would have been one that's pretty much made for your skills.
Yeah. I was, you know, that course, I wish there was more courses like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the steepness of it and the fact that it actually had some sections that were, you know, a little challenging to ride. Like that's a big change from a lot of American cross courses. And yeah, that was fun. I definitely enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah. It was the type of thing where every once in a while, a feature will, you know, give people more seconds than not, but I mean that little Rudy downhill, or not even Rudy, it was pretty good length. You had the people who could ride it when hardly braking, and then there were people who were riding it and just sort of crawling down it, and that definitely made a difference. Yeah, it'd be fun to see more of that in cyclocross.
Totally. And that course was really nice too, because it I wouldn't describe it as dangerous at all, you know, as opposed to some like elite mountain bike courses that I've raced on, which are, you know, an amateur can't ride,
right?
But that course was a nice balance of, you know, technical and challenging, but not like outright sketchy.
Oh, that was the thing that, you know, just amazed me seeing these World Cup courses, especially La Bresse in France, is that you have people who have qualified for a World Cup who are getting off their bikes and walking some of the features. I mean, obviously they're not going to be hitting the top 100 of it, but it's still, they are better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And they're, you know,
it's the TV does not do justice to how steep World Cup mountain bike courses are. I mean, it's, you know, over 20-25% grade a lot of the time. Like those downhills, you can't slow down on it. It's a controlled slide.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely gets into your head too, especially once you make one mistake. They're tough and that can definitely steamroll.
So I'm assuming some of that's like the same in the domestic mountain bike racing that you got, especially out west.
Yeah.
Definitely some bigger descents.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's...
Although I would say places like Bear Creek, the rocks probably hurt more.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the more technical courses that we've had in the last few years. I'm definitely missing that race. I wish they had made that a national. But
yeah, that was sort of unfortunate. It seemed like, you know, lots of stuff going on
behind
the scenes of that race.
It's got to be worth it for the promoter, and I get that. Yeah. But, you know, it was such a sweet hometown race for me.
Yeah, so. But what I was talking about originally, you know, it was good to hear about the cross, but it was just, you know, your experience just, what, like a month ago? A couple weeks ago, like nationals, mountain bike nationals.
Oh, yeah, last weekend.
Last weekend,
I'm, like, freshly back from
that. So, first off, this is my problem with this. I mean, I've tried to follow mountain biking a lot closer now, especially since I've been doing a lot of work at these World Cups, but I knew nationals was happening, but having the cross country races on a Friday,
yeah,
it just seems like for a sport that hasn't really attracted national attention in the same way that Road Nationals has, even Cyclocross Nationals, just because you get a huge crowd and it's such a spectator easy. You know, you can do even a low level, which we seem to always get, TV production, and people are going to watch it. Mountain bike sort of has lost lost the script a little bit on that. And then, do you know why? I mean, why is the cross country, which is an Olympic sport, on a Friday instead of on the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on, and you know, the decline in media coverage for cross country mountain biking in the United States is definitely a complex issue. But you know, I think with nationals, I think it's just a lack of planning. I mean, they put the enduro race, a race that you couldn't televise,
right,
on Sunday. You know, which is, yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. You know, I don't know who it comes down to, if it's, you know, the promoter or USA Cycling, but
I mean, I understand downhill,
yeah,
just because that's a big money sport and there are Americans who win races.
Yeah.
Totally. A lot.
Totally.
You know, so I can understand why they're bringing the most to USA Cycling, so I understand why they get the premier spot.
Yeah, I mean,
but the cross country bit seems like that's getting a little lost, and that it doesn't help that I was not alone. I think I'm pretty tuned into these things. I was not alone in knowing, oh, that happened already.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my larger theory, because it's not just nationals, it's, you know, all of our races. You know, I mean, our organization, and you know, Scott Tedra puts on an HC level,
yes,
UCI mountain bike race series, and
the media
coverage for that was challenging. You know, it's you know, a lot of media outlets aren't sending, you know, reporters to races anymore in the same way. But
that's kind of everywhere.
Yeah,
because there aren't reporters that exist. But that's a whole nother conversation. but I understand that the mountain biking's still getting the short end of the stick there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just comes back to planning. You know, I think that we might need like a riders association and, you know, promoters association, that we can actually sit down and like, hey, these are the things that we need from races. We need to make sure that they're scheduled during a time when people can watch them,
mm-hmm,
and make sure that we coordinate the media coverage for it, so that people that are interested, you know, can watch it, and so that we can grow our audience. And yeah, I mean, I've got think a lot about this, you know, and definitely talk a lot with other pro riders about it, because it's, yeah, I mean, part of our sport being valuable to sponsors is having good media coverage. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, it's the thing that is frustrating. And again, I'm just looking at this with fresh eyes, is that the way that cross country mountain biking has changed over the past several years, especially on the World Cup level, but even coming down, is just shorter laps, shorter races, makes it much more, it's closer to, I mean, for a spectator, it's much easier to watch now. You know, you get to see people more, and especially if you have a good course design, you can be a spectator that goes to, you only have to go to two or three different spots and have an exciting time watching the race. You know, you get to an uphill, you get to a downhill, get to the finish, and you're fine. That's sort of how the crowds work in these World Cup races. But that's the frustrating part for me, is that that's where a cyclocross fan who may have never really known anything about mountain biking, because it was like they're off and they're gone for 4 hours and
right,
then you see them again, you know, later. Now it's so much similar. I mean, the racing is more similar, the tactics are similar, you know, especially with the bikes now. There's so much different terrain that you can put into a course, and people can ride and ride it fast. So.
Yeah, totally. I mean, hey, cyclocrossers, mountain biking's awesome in the summer.
Yeah.
Like, come watch the races. Come do the races. Like,
well, and I think it's a great. I think the participation part of it is, you know, this is sort of the theory I always go back to, is that a lot more people are getting into the sport of cycling through cyclocross. It's such an easy entry point. And then from there, you know, you see a lot of these guys who are like, oh, well, I'm going to go race road now. I think if they went the other direction and went and, you know, jumped into a mountain bike race, they'd really enjoy it, because it's a similar discipline. You only need one bike.
Right. Totally. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think from a participation standpoint, cross country mountain biking is actually doing great in the U.S., especially with, you know, NYCA and the high school cycling leagues.
Yes.
And we have some serious junior talent coming up now. But, you know, I mean, even the Mid-Atlantic race I was at this morning, I mean, there was at least 400 people at that event.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It's far exceeding road participation levels
right
at this point. you know, it's just, yeah, from a spectator standpoint, it's, I'm not sure what the issue is. And I think it might be part of the nature of American cycling is that it is more participation driven.
Oh, absolutely. You're never going to get people out there that aren't friends or relatives of racers who are just going to show up to a race. I mean, that's just a fact of life. Right. That's every cycling discipline other than road nationals where people just want to go to the climb and make a fool of themselves. You know, that's kind of,
yeah, no, that's completely true.
But I was just thinking, and it's guys like you, it's friends that I have who are, you know, racing in nationals who you don't even know it's going on. I just found that frustrating for pretty much the premier, whatever should be everybody's A race of the season.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it is, you know, Mammoth Mountain, super beautiful, also extremely remote, three hours from the nearest, you know, airport. I mean, we drove 16 hours from Colorado because it was easier and cheaper to drive there than to fly in. You know, so I mean, I think it was just sort of inaccessible. And, you know, while it's a good venue from a participation standpoint, it is hard to get to for spectators.
You know, and that's true, too. If we look back to those Bear Creek days that we're talking about, I mean, those crowds were awesome. And you had every, you know, you talk about the messengers and fixed gear crew from Philadelphia. All of them were like hanging out in the woods on those races. Totally. It was amazing.
Yeah. And that was, you know, and I think that's part of it. I mean, that was an accessible race to get to.
Right.
It was promoted well. And so we had, you know, as far as I remember, thousands of people out in the woods. I mean, it was rowdy.
It was great. It was a great party out there.
Probably the best crowd I've ever raced in the U.S. And so I'm hoping, you know, we have nationals in Snowshoe, West Virginia for the next 2 years.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you that because I couldn't remember where it was. So that's great. So maybe we'll see that again.
Yeah, I'd like to hope so. I've been, you know, trying to get people hyped up on it already. So
yeah.
I think it'll be a great course. And
very cool. Do we know? Well, I guess we should start petitioning now to get, well, they won't have downhill, will they?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So Snowshoe's big.
Oh,
big
that's
mountain.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. So we got to start petitioning for weekend cross country.
Yeah.
And short track.
Yeah. I mean,
well, short track can be Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did that the year before, and I think people complained because, like, oh, well, now we're tired for the cross country. We'll try to get that Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, you and me, we'll get on with USA Cycling. We'll get this all straightened out.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Outstanding. What else do you want to talk about?
Anything I don't know, out man. There? I'm trying to think. My brain's getting a little empty here.
Yeah, it's been a long day.
Yeah. It's been a long, hot day.
Yeah. Yeah, you drove straight down from Delaware to here.
Yeah. So
I made you some coffee.
You did. It was awesome coffee.
Thank you. But I think we did it. Let's talk again, you know, in the middle of cyclocross season.
Yeah.
We'll do a follow-up there.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
Where can people follow along with you?
So probably Instagram would be the best place to follow me. It's Cole_Oberman on Instagram. Yeah.
You also, I mean, your website, you actually keep up to date.
I do. Like. Yeah.
You're a rare person out there. I went and looked at, is it just ColeOberman.com?
It is. www.ColeOberman.com.
Yeah. But that, yeah, so go there as well. All right, and best luck in Colombia. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And happy early birthday.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that trip. All 70,000 feet of climbing of it.
And if I don't see you before, we'll see you in Baltimore and D.C. when cyclocross gets rolling.
For sure, man.
All right.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, there you have it. That was ColeOberman. Great conversation with Cole. It's awesome to have him in the basement. Follow him on social media. Also, follow me at CXHairs on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to get in touch, it's feedback@cxhairs.com. And, you know, also iTunes. Go leave a review. Give a rating. Follow the Wide Angle Podium Network. Go become a member there. Go get yourself some Michelin tires, and we will talk to you again soon.